It's never a bad time to look out for our physical and mental health, but as September is Suicide Prevention Month, that shines a brighter spotlight on prioritizing our well-being. This week, we're focusing on preventing infectious diseases and protecting ourselves from dangers that could affect our physical health. We're also taking a look at a new approach to depression treatment that's now been expanded for use by teenagers. This treatment, transcranial magnetic stimulation, could also be a benefit for other problems such as anxiety or chronic pain. And emotional pain is just as real. For those who have suffered trauma such as domestic abuse, trigger warnings can provide an opportunity for viewers to prepare themselves or skip potentially damaging content. We talk about how recent films are addressing that controversy. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. A movie came out recently that basically drew both positive and negative reactions. Now, that movie was It Ends With Us, starring Blake Lively. The Colleen Hoover romance bestseller adaptation is a big hit on the screens. But not everyone is in love with this love story. And for some, it seems less like a romance and more like a horror story. Bridget Stumpf, the executive director of the Network for Victim Recovery of D.C., she's here with us right now. Thanks for joining us, Bridget.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Hal.
Well, first of all, how do you describe your Network for Victim Recovery? Why was it created? What does it do?
Yeah, Network for Victim Recovery of DC was originally a local service provider supporting all survivors of violence in the nation's capital. And as we've seen the need continue to grow across the country, we now offer national scope work doing appellate advocacy for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault, really working to make the law work for survivors across the country.
Okay. So now a spoiler alert. If you haven't seen this movie, you might want to move away if you're planning on seeing it, because for the purposes of disclosing, I saw it. It Ends With Us is the name of the movie. And when it was over, I looked at the person I was with and I said, that's a really good movie. I didn't really like seeing this violence, this domestic violence that was portrayed in the movie. And the next morning I woke up, opened up the Hollywood Reporter, and who was there? Bridget Stumpf. She had an opinion piece in the Reporter talking about this. And why were you moved to write that op-ed? And tell us a little bit of the short story of what you had to say in that article.
Yeah, not dissimilar to your experience. I went to the film. I went with a colleague who had read the book, who was familiar with the story, and actually gave me the heads up because I wasn't aware that there was going to be domestic violence content in the film. So I went into it knowing what I was going to see. But what actually left me, I would say, the most shook was really the inability for someone who was walking into this film similarly situated like I was to not have the awareness that I did going into what I was about to experience. And ultimately, from the work that I do in my day to day, really wishing and hoping when the film ended that there had been immediate support provided to survivors, but more importantly for their loved ones who may have been there and may be a source of support as survivors reach out to friends and family more frequently than anyone else in their lives.
So in the article, you talked about a trigger alert and that there should be trigger alerts in movies. Now, we already have a rating system. We have GGP, all these different things, you know. But the thing is, you know, we don't have trigger alerts. The movie Blink Twice, which just came out, seemed to get caught up in that controversy and put a trigger alert up on the beginning of the movie. I want to show this to everybody. And this trigger alert basically warns people in the audience that there is going to be something in this movie that may trigger you. So my next question to you, Bridget, is let's say you go into the movie, you see an alert like this. Are you going to turn around and walk out, or what do you do? I mean, what is the purpose of a trigger alert?
It's such a good question. And honestly, I was surprised to see the controversy around really what we were advocating for in that article was just caretaking of communities. And, you know, it's interesting to me, I've reflected on the response to the article and some of the resistance about this idea of how content warnings might impact the film goer's experience, or maybe that they don't work when you look at studies. But really, a content warning isn't to eliminate the trauma cue that someone might experience. It's to fully empower them to make a decision about what they want to be exposed to and what they may not want to be exposed to. We're not advocating for content warnings, you know, be the reason that someone avoids a really beautiful story, but that we trust people to make decisions when they're fully informed that's going to be best for themselves. And the example I really like to think about is we know that individuals who are veterans, who have served in combat and have, you know, been in military service have often very challenging time going to like a 4th of July celebration where there might be loud bangs and fireworks, and no one would think it was unusual or a lot to ask for to warn a friend or a family member that was going to, you know, a barbecue or a celebration to let them know they might experience some of those trauma cues that might be activating for them based on their lived experience. I really just saw this as something as similar as that example where we're just trying to empower people regardless of their trauma exposure so that they can be cared for as an audience member in the same way we'd want to care for anyone in our life.
But if Hollywood was going to do that and you don't find out until you get into the theater, then how helpful is that really? I mean, do you get up and walk out and go back to the popcorn stand? Shouldn't you know before you even go to the theater?
You know, when we look at the best practices and evidence around what it means to create a trauma-informed approach, the goal is that we're being transparent and really giving people all the information to make the decision that's going to be best for them. And so we know that while the rating system is certainly great for parents and other folks that want to understand content to make a decision about purchasing a ticket and going and watching a film, not everyone does that. And all this is an extra opportunity for everyone who's in that experience to fully agree and consent to what they're about to be exposed to. And from an industry perspective, they're already there. It's not like this is going to impact sort of the way we think about, you know, people avoiding the film or not being interested to go. And when we look at research around content warnings, they don't always cause people to avoid it. But what it does is that it fully prepares that trauma survivor for the fact that they're not just going to be remembering their trauma experience when they're cued, they'll be reliving that. And at least they get to make the decision, even if it's right before the exposure to the film, about whether or not they want to be reliving the trauma event that they've survived.
And just for the sake of clarity, the video we were just showing was from the movie Blink Twice. That's the Zoe Kravitz film. Do you think what they did with the trigger alert was a good way to do this?
I mean, what a great modeling, because to your point, Hal, it's not happening, you know, just and only right before the film. While certainly that can be helpful and effective, this was really about shifting industry norm. And I think the article around It Ends With Us is really just a microcosm example to start to think about how can we transform every sector for any trauma survivor so that when they experience different places, they really feel that they're getting this empowering, dignified experience. And this is just one simple way that we can do that, whether it's content warnings and resources that we offer at the end. It's really, again, just making sure that we're caretaking for the people in our lives that sadly 70% or more of them will have had a trauma exposure throughout their lifetime.
All right, Bridget Stumm, thanks so much for joining us. I guess maybe since we're in Hollywood, maybe some of the movie companies are seeing this interview and, you know, maybe you're sending a message. Thanks so much for joining us. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, a non-drug treatment for depression could be even more effective than medication, and that treatment is now available for teenagers. We'll show you how it works right after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. The FDA has approved transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS for short, therapy for adolescents 15 years and older with depression. Now, that happened just a few months ago. TMS has already been in use for adults with depression quite effectively, and we brought you that story last year, including a conversation with a patient who believed the therapy probably saved his life. Those are pretty bold assertions, but as we enter Suicide Prevention Month, this September, it's certainly an important topic to discuss. So joining us right now, Dr. Andrew Luchter, director of UCLA's TMS department. And doctor, welcome. And, you know, I guess the first thing we want to know is to reiterate for the audience how this process works. And I know you have a little show and tell here for us.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much for having me today, Hal. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. TMS is really a revolutionary new treatment for depression. New, it's been around 15 years or so, but in many ways it's a well-kept secret. People are just not aware of the availability of it. The way this treatment works is that we apply an electromagnet, much like what you have in an MRI machine, to the side of the patient's head. I brought an electromagnet
here. That is the
device. This is the electromagnet itself.
Okay.
And for the treatment session, we take it, we place it alongside the patient's head,
okay.
And it puts out gentle pulses of electromagnetic energy that stimulate the brain. If you do this day after day, week after week, for about 6 weeks, we find that it can relieve symptoms of depression in about two-thirds of patients, even those who've not gotten enough benefit from medication.
There's something called TENS, the magnetic treatment for like spinal pain.
Mm-hmm.
And is it similar to that?
Well, this doesn't actually put out electricity like TENS does. TENS actually uses an electric current.
Uh-huh.
This is putting pulses of magnetic energy onto the scalp.
Is there any danger to that?
Well, every treatment can have side effects. The most common side effect initially is a little bit of discomfort on the head.
Do you feel the buzzing or something?
You feel kind of a tapping sensation. You know, some people say it's like having a woodpecker tapping on your head, although I'm not sure anybody really knows what that's like.
Yeah.
There are really very few side effects in general, fewer than with medication. There is a very small risk of provoking a seizure with this treatment. It's very small. It's about 1 in 30,000 individuals, so it's exceedingly rare.
Now, we're looking at some video of this being used, and, you know, we talked about the idea that this can be used on teenagers as well. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah. So, you know, we now know that depression in adolescents is a major problem, and a lot of adolescents don't really want to take medication, and the side effects can be a problem with that. We have actually treated a number of adolescent patients at UCLA with TMS and have gotten very good results. It's been very well tolerated, and we know that this is a safe and effective treatment.
You talk about depression in teenagers and its prevalence. Is it worse now than it ever has been?
You know, all of the studies are showing that, Hal, that there's much more depression. There are a lot of theories on it. The social pressures being greater, pressures in school.
Social media?
A lot of talk about social media, the fact that it's leading people to feel more peer pressure and more isolated from their friends.
So kids today, and especially we had the lockdown for COVID, also isolated the kids, so that may be exacerbating the situation a little bit.
Yes, I think COVID took a major mental health toll on adolescents. That is, they were separated from friends. They really didn't have the social interaction in the classroom. So I think we paid a price for that.
What are other options for depression? We've certainly heard of ketamine.
Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, there are psychotherapy, just good old talking with people is very mm-hmm. effective for many patients. We've had antidepressant medications around for a long time now as well. Those are safe and effective. Ketamine is out there. Ketamine can be very effective for some patients. As we know, there are risks of it. It can be a medication to which people can become dependent. So we have to be quite careful with that. You know, of all of these treatments that are available, you know, TMS is something that has one of the most favorable side effect profiles. That is, it's very safe and effective. And it's something we're seeing increasingly used not just for depression, but also for obsessive compulsive disorder, for chronic pain conditions, for PTSD as well.
How does that help pain?
It's very interesting. You know, we're really thinking of all of these things as brain network conditions. And we can apply the energy to the pain-regulating networks in the brain, sort of toning down the perception of pain. And what patients find is pain is less intense, and it bothers them less. They can actually get out there and do more because the pain's just not interfering.
So the bottom line question is it covered by insurance?
This is covered by insurance for the treatment of depression by most health insurance plans and by Medicare. Adolescent depression, as you mentioned in the intro, is a pretty new indication for this. So that's not universally covered yet, but we hope it will be covered before too long.
So the bottom line here is we keep moving with technology and finding new ways to do things.
We do. And, you know, this opens up whole new possibilities of treatment for patients who really have not been able to benefit from some of the traditional kinds of treatments.
All right. Dr. Luchter, thanks so much for joining us. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we have more on the medical front as a certain TV series once warned, winter is coming, and with it, concern over an infectious disease like COVID, another one like the flu. But we're currently concerned with many more issues than that, including a worldwide spike in Mpox. We talked to our medical consultant about whether we should worry right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. After a summer spike, we can't pretend that the COVID virus is not still with us. And on the heels of that comes word that there's a new COVID strain spreading. Reports say that a new subvariant, XEC, could surpass the latest super infectious subvariant. So for more information on that and other findings that plague us, let's turn to our in-depth medical consultant, emergency physician, and professor, Dr. Matt Waxman. Good to see you, Matt. Thanks for coming back and joining us. And you know, let's talk about that COVID summer spike and the new subvariant.
Yeah, hi, Hal. Good to be back with y'all. So COVID is here with us. I think that's really the take-home message. The Centers for Disease Control this year said COVID's going to be what we call endemic. We are going to be dealing with COVID every year. It's going to peak at seasons, probably in the summer and the winter. Seasons where we're either most active outside, where the virus likes it because it's warm, or in the winter where we're all inside sort of huddled together and we're spreading COVID to each other. As a virus, COVID's going to continue to mutate. It's really the nature of those mutations that cause concern. Currently, the current mutations are subvariants on Omicron, which we all remember in 2021, caused lots of hospitalizations, people to get sick. It kind of continued to mutate into more variants from Omicron called what we call JN1. One of the variants we're tracking now is called FLIRT, F-L lowercase I-R-T, which does have some changes to the major spike protein. What is really important, I think, for all of us to know is that our current vaccines, especially the ones coming out in the fall, have been tailored to actually take into account JN1 and hopefully FLIRT.
And just clarify for me, Matt, XEC?
XEC is a variant of Omicron that is currently spreading in the United States.
Okay. And so we talk about the notion that there are vaccinations and boosters, and they're designed for each different subvariant?
They are, but of course they lag in time because the vaccines we're developing now are probably not going to be available till either the fall or the spring. So we have to kind of, just like with the flu, the vaccine manufacturers and the government have to get together and try to predict what we will see in the future and what these vaccines will cover. Thankfully, the current strains that we're seeing now, including the ones you mentioned, I mentioned, actually don't mutate that spike protein that allows the COVID to get into our cells very much, and we still get immunity from the vaccines that are coming out now and in the fall.
All right, so the million-dollar question, have you been seeing many people coming into your emergency room?
We sure are. So we are seeing large numbers of COVID. Now, again, it is nothing like we saw in 2021 when Omicron first came out and emerged, but we are seeing larger numbers of COVID. That said, we are not seeing large numbers of hospitalizations and deaths, which is what we're really concerned about and what we're tracking. I think what we're seeing is we're seeing sort of more COVID now for a couple of reasons. One is that the current strains out there probably have a little bit higher transmissibility. They're easy to transfer between patients. The other thing that we're seeing right now is people have not been immunized, you know, many people since 2021, and so they have waning immunity. So they're getting sick, but the immunizations that they had in the past may prevent them from being hospitalized, getting ill, or dying. So we're really encouraging people to get vaccinated again.
All right, so don't wait, right, is what you're saying. Don't wait for the new vaccines to come out. What about the kids?
So for kids, we're recommending vaccinations for kids 6 months and older. Have that discussion with your pediatrician, your family medicine physician, and definitely get your kids vaccinated. As time goes on, we know more about the safety of these vaccines, and they are very, very safe in kids.
Also back in the news is Mpox, which we used to call monkeypox. I guess we just abbreviated it to make it simpler.
Well, we're calling it Mpox because it really affects humans. It was originally called monkeypox because in the late 1950s, it was identified first in primates. And fast forward into the 1970s, there were large numbers of monkeypox cases in East Africa, specifically the Democratic Republic of Congo, where we're seeing lots of infections right now.
Is this as dangerous as smallpox?
Not as dangerous as smallpox, thank goodness. When you say smallpox, you get people like me very scared and concerned that work with emerging infectious diseases. Mpox right now is having a large outbreak in East Africa. And that Mpox strain, we call it clade 1, makes people much sicker than the clade 2 that we saw in 2022 and still see a few cases here in North America.
So it's not common in the U.S., but could it become that way?
We have cases right now in the U.S. In fact, there was an outbreak in a prison in Iowa last week, and those were clade 2 cases where people got the classic sort of pox rash. They got a little sick, but patients did not die. We are tracking clade 1 cases, which is having a huge outbreak in East Africa right now, causing deaths in children, young adults, pregnant women. There are a few cases in Northern Europe. And some in Southeast Asia, but none, thankfully, here in North America yet.
But why should those of us here in Southern California worry about this?
We should worry about this because we are all global citizens, and the world is much closer and intertwined than it used to be. We track infections, one, in for example, in East Africa, where I've worked, because it's the right thing to do, and it also predicts what we may see here in the future.
All right, Matt Waxman, always good to talk to you. And bottom line is, take care of yourself, right?
Absolutely. I mean, take care of yourself. Drink plenty of liquids when it's hot. To avoid mosquito-borne illnesses, please do us all a favor. Wear sunscreen. Get rid of standing water. Take it easy out there in the heat.
All right. We'll be back with more Fox 11 News in depth right after this. Don't go away. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. You know what it's called? It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.